the National Archives podcast series. Army Deaths, Marriages and Births, 1761 to 1913.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this latest in the series of modern records seminars. Today I'm going to be talking about Army Deaths, Marriages and Births for the period 1761 to 1913. I've deliberately termed it in that order because, regrettably, deaths of soldiers are more common than their marriages and births. Hopefully, one might expect there to be some nice coherent sources that would help us trace these events. But regrettably, this isn't the case, and it's necessary to consult a wide range of record sources to obtain the information you want. What then are the sources that are available? Well, first of all, if the event occurred within the United Kingdom, then it should be recorded in the civil registration system of the appropriate country. Prior to the start of the civil registration systems in the various parts of the United Kingdom, you'd be reliant either on the army records themselves or on parish registers. If the event happened overseas, then up to the 30th of June 1879, King's regulations, or Queen's regulations, depending upon the sovereign on the throne at the time, would tell you what should happen. And to trace records of these, you're going to be using army records, regimental registers, and the various army returns, of which there are very many. From the 1st of July 1879 onwards, the recording of these events overseas should be covered by the Registration of Births, Deaths and Marriages Army Act 1879. And for brevity, I'll be referring to this as the 1879 Act from here on. And these required the keeping of army returns of births, marriages and deaths. If we look at the provisions of that 1879 Act, it came into force, first of all, on the 1st of July 1879, but the records themselves don't actually start until 1881. They cover officers, soldiers, and their families. And supposedly, they do not apply to events that occurred within the United Kingdom, but I wouldn't rely on that point. It makes provision for registers of these events to be sent to the General Register Office in England, and for copies of the entries related to, and I quote from the Act, Scotch or Irish subjects, unquote, to be forwarded to the relevant General Register Office in those countries. It also makes provision for the deposit of earlier records at the General Register Office in England. The King's or Queen's regulations cover marriages and baptisms. And these regulations require the regiment to keep a whole range of regimental books, of which one of these are the Register of Marriages and Baptisms. You'll note that there is no provision for them to keep a regimental book of deaths. Now, the Register of Marriages and Baptisms, the regulations state, this book is to contain a registry of the marriages of every non-commissioned officer, trumpeter, drummer, farrier and private, and of the births and baptisms of every legitimate child born of parents belonging to each regiment and battalion. It goes on to say, when a soldier's marriage takes place in the United Kingdom, care is to be taken to ascertain that the ceremony is legally performed and on foreign stations that local regulations relative to marriages are properly regarded. All legal marriages of soldiers, whether with or without leave, are to be entered in this register, which is quite distinct from the married roll. The married roll, you'll recall, lists those soldiers for whom the army has decided that it will make provision for the taking their spouses overseas, and this most certainly did not cover 100% of married soldiers. The regulations go on to state that officers who were married and married officers who have children baptised while on foreign service should avail themselves of the regimental register. There are circumstances in which no regular or permanent record of such marriage or baptism would otherwise be found. As far as deaths are concerned, the King's and Queen's regulations are more circumspect. I regret to say the time period we're talking about, soldiers were considered rather to be indispensable, or to be dispensable rather, and the army was not much concerned with deaths of them. So, for ordinary soldiers, the column marked dead or deserted was just to be filled in, and it says in case of any extraordinary number of deaths or desertions, a special report is to be transmitted with the monthly return. And for officers, in the event of an officer's decease, the place and date of his death are to be inserted in the monthly return in the column of vacant commissions. In short, as far as the army was concerned, a death was equivalent to a vacancy. Now, what repositories hold records that may assist you? Well, first of all, the general register offices hold army and regimental registers, and we'll be looking at these in a little detail in a moment. The National Archives holds some regimental registers as well. Not many, but a few. And it contains a very large range of army records and returns. The British Library, and to be more precise, the India Office records held by them, contain ecclesiastical returns, directories and India Army lists, and newspapers, all of which may give you details of these sorts of events. There are one or two other miscellaneous repositories. For example, the Army Chaplain's Department, which is the Ministry of Defence Chaplain's Department, did hold a range of regimental registers. Those records have now been transferred to the National Archives, where they're to be found in series W0156. For Roman Catholics, the Roman Catholic Army Chaplain holds records. And there are some records also held by regimental museums and archives, mostly related to Guards regiments. Now, these records date mostly from the mid-19th century. There is no omnibus catalogue of them, and there are very few indexes indeed. Let us start in our survey of records by looking at what is held by the General Office, Register Office for England and Wales, first of all, related to deaths. First of all, the Army Chaplain's Returns of Deaths cover the period 1796 to 1880. And carrying on from these are the Army Returns of Death, which go from 1881 to 1955. There are later ones than this, but they take a slightly different form. If you're interested in the period in which the United Kingdom had administrative responsibility for the Ionian Islands, there are Ionian Island military, civil and chaplain's registers cover the period 1818 to 1864. War deaths, Natal and South Africa forces, 1899 to 1902. There are separate indexes to each of these. They are on paper at the Family Records Centre and they are widely available on microfiche and they are to be found online at findmypast.com. But don't get too excited and expect everything to be there. The Army Chaplain's Returns of Death, even though it's covering nearly 90 years, there are only 32 printed pages for the index. And the Army Returns of Death from 1881 to 1955 is contained on 16 microfiche. So that quite clearly does not cover the whole range of soldiers, let alone their families, who died during those periods. If you look, first of all, at the Army Chaplain's Returns of Deaths, their indexes, 1796 to 1880, you'll find surname, forename, station, year and page. And from that, you can order a certificate. And we'd like to look at one specifically, which you will find in the Indexed Army Returns of Death for James Watts, aged 44, died Bloemfontein and in 1907. If you order the certificate for them, you will find all the normal details that you might expect on a death certificate. But in this particular case, it notes his nationality, and James Watts was Scotch. This means that we could turn to the online indexes at Scotland's People for the statutory register of deaths. And if we specify a search to be made amongst the minor records, service and war returns for 1907, which covers this particular period, we will find an entry for James Watts there, and we can actually call up and view the original record online. And first of all, at the head of it, it's a certified extract from the returns of death made to the Registrar General for England from the undermentioned military stations. And it gives details of James Watts's death. And these are exactly the same as you would get on a certificate issued from the General Register Office for England and Wales. Looking now at the index to war deaths for Natal and the South Africa forces, 1899-1902, if you look in there, you'll find an entry for J. Southern on the 1st Liverpool Regiment, and it gives a page 29. If we actually look at the original registers, and I was lucky enough to have access to the registers themselves, you will get this in the form of a certificate. And it tells us the regimental number, name, his date of death, the 14th of February 1900, died at Ladysmith, and he died of disease. In the case of the South African wars, we can actually turn to the medal rolls, which do tend to give a little bit of additional information. And sure enough, the medal roll for the 1st King's Liverpool Regiment show the same individual, and they note he was deceased. They differ by a day, they say the 15th of February. For South Africa field forces, there are actually printed casualty lists as well. And I'm looking here at one for the New South Wales Lancers, and we'll find a Corporal F. Kilpatrick, who was killed at Slingerfontein on the 6th of March 1900. We can also turn to the Roll of Honour database kept by the Australian War Memorial, which will confirm that particular information and the fact that he died of wounds. If you actually want his death registration, then you'll have to approach the Army Records Authorities in Australia. They call that the Soldiers' Career Management Agency in Melbourne. If he happened to have been a New Zealander, then there's an online database, the Cenotaph database kept by the Auckland Museum in New Zealand, again, which contains useful information which would confirm those sort of deaths. I'd like now to turn to marriages. What do the General Register Office for England and Wales have on those? Well, the Army Chaplain's Returns for Marriages cover the period, again, 1796 to 1880. The Army Returns of Marriage from 1881 to 1955, and these do continue in a slightly different form from that date on. Again, if we're talking about the Ionian Islands when they were under British jurisdiction, then there are Chaplain's Marriage Registers covering the period 1818 to 1864. And there are special indexes related to marriages within British lines during time of war, covering 1907 to 1955. Separate indexes to each of these, on paper at the Family Records Centre, and widely available on microfiche, and online at findmypast.com. If you look, for instance, in the index to Army Chaplains Registers of Marriage, 1796 to 1880, you'll find the information one might expect there: surname, forename, station, year and page. Looking at a specific entry for John Watts, Trinidad, 1834, page 515. And I'm now looking at the original entry in that book. In fact, it's a sheet of parchment. You, of course, will be getting information from the General Register Office for England and Wales in the form of a certificate. And it contains the information that you might hope for on a certificate of marriage. But these army indexes are incomplete. So what do you do in those circumstances? Well, first of all, you can apply for the certificate anyway, marking the application form as not in public index. But you do need the regiment, and you need the date to within 5 years, because the overseas section at the General Register Office will search the register for that particular regiment to see whether they can find the individual you want. And here, for example, is an entry in the marriage register for the 2nd Battalion of the 60th Foot in 1832 between Henry Hasplink and Elizabeth Wilson. That entry is not in the indexes. I'd like now to turn to births. The General Register Office for England and Wales holds regimental registers of birth. In fact, Army Births and Baptisms, Form AB91, to give it its correct designation, covering the period 1761 to 1924. There are actually two indexes to this, a main series plus a supplementary index, and you need to search both. The Army Chaplain's Returns of Birth, which cover the period 1796 to 1880, so there's an overlapping with the regimental registers. And the Army Service Returns of Birth, covering 1881 to 1955. Now, you'll notice there's a clear transition from the Chaplain's Returns of Birth to the Army Service Returns, 1881, the start of the Army Service Returns. At that date, the regimental registers of birth should, in theory, have ceased. But many regiments carried on with their registers past the 1881 date, and they finally died out in 1924. If we're interested in births that occurred on the Ionian Islands during British rule there, there are military, civil and chaplains registers covering the period 1818 to 1864. Separate indexes to each of these, paper at the Family Records Centre, widely available on microfiche, and online at findmypast.com. If we look at the Indexed Army Returns of Birth, 1896 to 1900, for instance, we'll find a typical entry there, forename, surname, a station, a year and page. I'd now like to look at some specific entries of births in those indexes to illustrate what we might find. Looking first at the Indexed Army Returns of Birth, we find an entry for Beatrice Frances L. Nutt, born in Allahabad in 1897. And if we look at the register itself, we will find the information one might expect there. Her father's name was Thomas Quick Nutt. And it says he was English, and it gives you the other information that you might expect. If you now look at the index of the regimental registers of birth, you will find three additional entries in there, all with different references, covering the same birth. Now that is not unusual. Multiple entries are fairly normal. In fact, I asked my colleague at the General Register Office whether four entries was a record, and he said, "Afraid not, we've seen five." What is happening here is that the regimental registers are actually recording the complete family. And as an individual moves from one unit to another, he will tell the adjutant about details of his complete family, his marriage, and their births of the children. Particularly prevalent in the Royal Artillery, where changing units seem to be more frequent, each unit that he went to has an entry related to his family. So finding four entries is not an unusual circumstance. The entry below the one that I've been looking at relates to Arthur John Hay, born in Allahabad in 1897. And we look at his particular entry, and one thing that we notice there is it says that the father, John Hay, was Scotch. If we look at the Index of Regimental Registers of Birth, we find a mere one entry related to Arthur J. Hay. So we perhaps can feel hard done by that there are only two duplicate entries. As I said, it mentions that the father was Scotch, which means we can turn, if we wish, to the entry online for Scotland's people, putting in the minor records and service and war returns, and we are able to turn up an entry for the birth of Arthur John Hay in that register. These registers don't cover just births, they do cover baptisms. There are some regimental registers of baptism, and I'm looking now at a register of baptism for the 1st Battalion at the 10th Regiment of Foot, related to Beatrice Catherine Ford. and she was born in West Ex in 1881. If we look in the Index of Regimental Registers of Baptism, we will indeed find that entry there. As she was born in England and Wales, we'll also find an entry in the Index to Births for England and Wales for the quarter ending March 1881. With that particular date, she was actually born on the 2nd of February, it might be useful to turn as well to have a look at the census. And the census for 1881 does indeed cover that family. Thomas Ford is the father, Lucy Ford his wife, the daughter Emily, another one Beatrice, and John Henry Bartlett as a stepson. So there's lots of additional information to go to for that. At the bottom of that page in that particular register, we will find an entry related to an Albert James Manning, and written over it in blue pencil is the word death. Now that's something that you wouldn't usually see, because you wouldn't be seeing the original registers themselves. But the General Register Office is very good. Where there is additional information of this sort, they are likely to tell you that there is an additional event recorded, and ask whether you want a further certificate covering that event. I'd like now to turn to material held by the National Archives, but in particular the Army Registers and Records. The National Archives covers some regimental registers in W68 for the militia and W69 for the Royal Artillery, and the recent acquisitions in W156. If we look in a register for the militia in W68, I'm looking here at an entry for the Registry of Marriages. It contains all the typical information that one would expect to find in a marriage entry. But in addition, at the bottom of it, it notes, died 16th of January 1876. Not immediately clear, but I assume that that is the soldier himself and not his wife. Some other of the regimental registers take the form of family record sheets. There are some registers at TNA, and some pages are actually to be found in the soldiers' documents in record series W97. Now, that is pretty much a rarity. But there are many, many of these at the General Register Office for England and Wales. And they will ask if you want additional certificates related to the entries contained on that page. Regrettably, they don't provide a service for photocopying the page itself. The National Archives does hold Army registers and records for other ranks. Soldiers' documents, records is W97, after 1900 for deaths, after 1883 for the family recorded there. Prior to 1900, you wouldn't expect to find much in the way of family information on those records. Royal Artillery Records of Service in W69, muster books and pay lists in W10 to W16, and these in particular would contain details of deaths. Don't expect them to record marriages, though they may have entries for people on the married roll, and don't expect them to cover details of births of children. Casualty returns, either in the muster books and pay lists themselves or in record series W25. Records of deceased soldiers' effects, W25, W69. And pension returns for the decease of pensioned soldiers, W22. If you look now, as I've got here, a soldier's document in W97 for Thomas Nutt that we saw earlier. Well, first of all, it misses out his middle name, Quick. It also records now that he's in the South Wales Borderers and not in the Royal Artillery. It gives details of his marriage to Gertrude Lavinia Knowles at the Register Office at Exeter on the 23rd of December 1894, and we can follow that up in Free BMD to confirm the entry in the index. It not only records the birth of the child Beatrice Frances Laura in Allahabad that we saw earlier, but there's an additional entry now for Florence Emily Mary, who was born in Meerut on the 10th of February 1893. Beg your pardon, I think that's 1903. The Royal Artillery Soldier Service Records in WO69 are particularly helpful as they make provision that is not necessarily covered in earlier records for details of a marriage. So the one I'm looking at the moment specifically states that this particular individual, Joshua Cook, was married on the 14th of February 1824, significantly earlier than the returns that you might find in WO97 for other categories of soldier. I'm looking now at a muster book and pay list. In particular, this is for the 18th Foot, the 2nd Battalion, the period 1863 to 1864. And one thing that you will find in these is where a death has occurred. So it notes here that Patrick Kennedy had died. He'd died on the 2nd of September at Camp Drury in New Zealand. At the end of the muster books, there are quite often casualty returns. Now, these may be at the end of the books themselves, or they may have been separated out and are now filed in record series WO25. And the one I've got at the moment is for Chatham District for the period ended 30th of June 1848. And one entry there has the death of Sergeant Lawrence Healy of Kilkenny. He died at Chatham on the 1st of May 1848. And it records that his possessions went to his widow, Bridget, from Chatham in Kent. The Royal Artillery is particularly good in the fact that it contains in WO69 a registry of deceased soldiers. And we can see here names, date of decease, place of decease, and cause of decease. So those are very good should you have somebody who was in the Royal Artillery. I'd like to look, perhaps lastly, at the pension returns, 1842 to 1882. These record payments to pensioners, other ranks, that is, not officers, and they're arranged by the district where the payment was paid. They only list individuals by name when a pension commenced, it ceased, or the person transferred between districts. It does, as it happens, include the Army, the Royal Navy, the East India Company, and the Merchant Navy pensions, and survives in record series WO22, for pensions paid in the UK from 1842 to 1862, and for those paid in the colonies from 1842 to 1882. If you look in those, for instance, in the quarterly return for out pensioners of Chelsea Hospital in the Norwich district from the 1st of October to the 31st of December 1846 inclusive, you'll find an entry there for my particular forebear, John Watts, who had died on the 1st of November 1846 at the age of 76. Now, what about army registers and records related to officers? Now, you may find details in officers' records of service, WO25 and WO76. You may find them indirectly, some information in the half pay ledgers, PMG4. Reports of officers' marriages, some going back as far as 1799, most starting in 1813 going on to 1838 in WO25. And officers' birth certificates, wills and personal papers in WO42. Those are extracted papers, as are the births, baptisms, marriages and death certificates, 1790 to 1888, extracted from destroyed papers in WO32. This last set in WO32 may include some other ranks as well. There are monthly returns of where the army was from 1754 to 1866 in WO17, and these do contain details of deaths of officers. And the casualty returns which we've looked at for ordinary soldiers do include officers as well. Those are in series WO25. Now, returns of service for officers, which go back to 1796, and some, but not many, go up to 1961. The content varies considerably. The returns from 1809 to 1810 really only give service details. A later series give family details. So that one, those for 1828 and 1829, for 1847, and 1870 to 1872 are particularly good. Well, what's our accessibility? Well, WO25 and WO76 have a card index, but some of the portions of the series which cover the Royal Engineers and Royal Artillery, those in WO54 are not indexed. I'm looking at the moment at a return of service for officers on half pay for 1828. And we'll note there that it has columns for married officers to give their date of marriage, their place of marriage, names of children, and the dates of their birth. The card index to officers, in particular I've got one here that happens to apply to a Royal Engineer, and it's the details on that card. They give a place and date of birth of the officer, who he married, who his issue was, and when and where he died. Half pay ledgers for officers cover the period 1737 to 1921. Now, until 1871, commissions were purchased. There was no real thing as a pension. An officer, if he wished to retire, had to either sell their commission or go on to half pay. The ledgers related to the payment of half pay, mainly in PMG 4, record payments and give officers address. And, by inference, when the entry ceases, it is fairly reasonable to assume that he may have died and follow up from there. WO25 contains some records related to officers' marriage. These are mainly ones which have been filed to assist in the payment of some form of pension to widows should the officer be killed in service. And these contain the information that you might expect on a marriage certificate. Extracted certificates in WO42. This particular one relates to a Christian Blanche, who was the widow of captain and adjutant on half pay of the Ray Fencibles, namely Aaron Blanche, who died at Bath on the 30th of January 1825. And it contains within there a copy of the entry in the parish register for their marriage in Ireland. Extracted certificates in WO32 can well contain information from all over the world. So the example I've got in front of me contains a certificate of baptism from Malta, one from Florence, and another one, an entry in the register of births and baptisms of the parish of St. Helier in the island of Jersey. Monthly returns of the army one might not think of immediately as being particularly helpful for this purpose. Really, they're interested in the deployment of the army. But contained in there is a segment on that form for officers have become non-effective, stating the place and date of decease of any officers or other cause of becoming non-effective. The one I'm looking at the moment contains Colonel Sir R. Arbuthnot, KCB, who died on the 6th of May, 1853. So for officers, that's a worthwhile place to look as well. And for officers, you might think it worth looking at wills, and in particular those of the Prerogative Court of Canterbury, which are perhaps the most likely ones, particularly if the officer died overseas. I've got a page in front of me of indexes to the Prerogative Court of Canterbury wills, and the first thing that surprised me when I looked at it was not only the number of officers on there, but the fact that it contains other ranks as well. So the one here, the will of Roderick Fraser, a sergeant in His Majesty's 66th Regiment of Foot of Portsea, Hampshire. The will was proved on the 9th of January 1810, and we can look on documents online at a register copy of that will. I have also looked at the original will, which, rather surprisingly, is more legible than the register copy. It's not usually that way round. The one thing it doesn't give, though, is the date of death. It just gives the date on which the will was proved. For the Prerogative Court of Canterbury, though, for the 18th century, certainly, and parts of the 19th century, you will find that a warrant had to be sworn out for probate of a will or grant of letters of administration. Those are to be found in record series Probe 14, which is housed off-site, so you'll have to order these in advance, and not always very well arranged for our purposes yet. But the one thing they do contain, and I'm looking for the one for Roderick Fraser at the moment, It says, departed this life the 25th of November 1809. So they do give details of the date of death. Wills for soldiers will be found in other courts as well, and there's one online, for instance, for wills in Cheshire, and that does contain a number of soldiers, as the example I have in front of me shows. I had always thought that soldiers who died in service were not liable to death duties. Well, certainly looking at the death duty registers, which are online up till about the 1820s, something like that, do contain a significant number of entries related to duties payable on wills and letters of administration for soldiers. So don't rule that out. That's well worth checking as well. It's also well worth checking to see if there's a monumental inscription, if you know where the individual was buried. And the one I'm looking at happens to be in my local churchyard and relates to James Hawkford, born in 1832, died on the 30th of December 1904, a Crimean veteran. Another one that I have in front of me relates to John Christie, Sergeant Major of the 54th Regiment, son of Sergeant Christie, late of the same corps, born at Birr in Ireland, died at Quebec on the 7th of January 1853, aged 33 years. And that inscription is to be found in the cathedral, the Anglican Cathedral of Holy Trinity in Quebec. If you're interested in somebody who died and looking for a gravestone in South Africa, go and look at the National Archives for South Africa's website, as there's a database there being compiled by the South African Genealogical Society, and you may well turn up something useful there. One of the problem areas that quite often occurs are related to events that happened in India. Now, the British Library, amongst the India Office records, contains ecclesiastical returns of baptisms, marriages and burials. For those who are particularly familiar with research in England and Wales, they're very much equivalent to what we think of as the bishop's transcripts. These ones are divided amongst the three presidencies of Madras, Bombay and Bengal, and they all begin around 1700, plus or minus a few years, and go until 1948. The British Library also contains directories and India Army lists and newspapers. The indexes to the ecclesiastical returns are very good. They're not completely alphabetical, but it's not a major task to search in them. And most of them have been filmed and are available through the family history centres or family history libraries of the LDS Church. And I'm looking here at an event that occurred in St. David's Church, Allahabad, and they relate to the families of Nutt and Hay that we saw much earlier on. So we can add one to the count of the records of the birth or baptism of Beatrice Frances Laura Nutt. I think that now makes five entries we found for her. There's also an entry to be found for her sibling, Florence Emily Mary, who was born in Meerut. There are records of marriage recorded there as well, and these contain the information that one might normally expect to find in a marriage entry. Similarly, you will find entries related to burials in India, and again, they contain the information that you would typically expect to find in a burial register. Well, I hope I've demonstrated to you that whilst there may not be one coherent set of records that record the deaths, marriages and births of soldiers and their family, there are a vast range of records, quite often duplicating each other, which are hopefully likely to reveal the information that you want about those events in your family. I wish you luck in your searches. Thank you.
This event was recorded live on March 27, 2007, at the National Archives at Kew. It was presented by Dr. Christopher Watts. This podcast is copyright the National Archives, all rights reserved.